Hello, welcome to Waldman's Words with Johnny Minardi. I'm really happy to have this guy in the studio. I've actually seen him more times this year than ever my entire life. So shout out to Cheesecake Factory and shout out to Johnny for making the trek from Orange County. We planned this a few months ago, so fruition is beautiful. The next, I'd say, few weeks are really, really going to be awesome for us. We've got Bruce Duff, who's been in the industry longer than I've been alive. He works for Knitting Factory Records, Knitting Factory Management, and before Hollywood Highland area got gentrified, the Knitting Factory up there was an incredible place in LA to see shows. I think that there are three different rooms kind of comparable to Webster Hall in New York right now, and I remember seeing the Matches play there on an Yvonne Dahl tour, and just, I think I saw Cute Is What We Aim For when they just signed to Fueled by Ramen. So it's pretty incredible, the history of that area and the Knitting Factory in general, which in New York just moved to Brooklyn because now they're cool. Now we've got Mark and Eric from Word Is Bond Management. They manage almost as many bands as Johnny manages producers. So it seems like they're pretty overwhelmed. I work with a bunch of bands and a bunch of producers. I don't understand how they have, like, in the tens. It's a little bit too much for me. I get a little bit of anxiety for their schedule, which is never healthy when you're really nervous about other people's livelihood. And we've got Dan Suriff. I hope I'm not butchering his last name, but he manages Black Veil Brides. And coincidentally, Andy Black from Black Veil Brides is going to be main stage at Warp this year. So I'm curious to see how that goes, because he's got a solo career and in addition to being in Black Veil Brides. I'm sure that they keep Dan very busy, because it's pretty amazing how big they've gotten. I think I remember Falling in Reverse was opening for them, and I remember Falling in Reverse was huge. Anyway, I digress. And we've got Blake Cordero, who works for several organizations. He did a lot of the work for So What Festival, and he also works for the Catalyst Publicity Group, which is based out of Florida, which I'm sure we'll be talking about just a tad with Johnny. I'm sure he misses the weather. Mm-hmm. And he manages this band, this pop-punk band that's getting a lot of attention called Nominee, and they're on tour a lot, and I think they're a really good band. So the next few weeks are going to be awesome. As always, every single Tuesday night, 5 p.m. Pacific time, 8 p.m. Eastern time, Waldman's Words. Big shout-outs to Tom, who's just in the room. Big shout-out to Fish for post-emo night not being too bitter and hungover and being next to me, because sometimes he yells at me for being on time or early, and today he didn't do that. So I can sleep soundly knowing that I didn't really offend too many people today, but then again, this show hasn't aired yet, so we're going to offend quite a few. Stick around for Waldman's Words. Enjoy the commercials. Hello, welcome back to Waldman's Words, featuring the elusive Johnny Minardi.
Yo, yo, how are you?
I'm so happy right now. You're here, Fish is in a good mood, I'm in a really good mood, and it seems like, I don't know, when's the last time you've done an interview like this?
I don't know, it's been a while, a couple months, maybe.
Oh, a couple months, I thought you were going to say years.
No, it's been, I don't know, I don't remember the last one I did, to be honest, I forget. It was like probably right when I moved here in November.
Well, I hope that the next interviewer who asks you when you say, oh, I know the last one I did, it was Waldman's Words.
There you go. I'll remember this time.
Thank you. So where did you grow up and how did you get immersed in music?
I grew up in the northwest suburbs of Chicago, and I was always just a huge fan of music growing up. I was into terrible shit like Korn and
you think that's terrible?
Yeah, it's very terrible. That's the stuff early on. I think they got a lot better as I grew.
I like their self-titled album. I sincerely like it. You don't like it?
I went to the 20-year tour last year or 2 years ago.
Yeah, it was.
And
it
I was
recent.
Like, this does not hold up for me.
It's kind of like certain movies when you rewatch them when you were a kid, you loved it, and you're like, wow, this isn't good.
Yeah, and it. But I do think their middle stuff was great, so I won't rag on it.
Like middle stuff, like Issues, or
no,
even after that?
Before that.
Follow
I don't
the
know
Leader?
How many they have, yeah. Life of Speech and Follow the Leader were great. Yeah, so I just always loved stuff. So I started street teaming from an early age for bands like that. And there was a
for
bunch
Immortal
of
Epic?
Yeah, for major labels. There was also companies called Streetwise, Loudside. There's all these different things that you would just get general, like Linkin Park, System of a Down, all this other stuff. So I did that for a while just because I loved like telling my friends about music.
In the new metal world, though.
Yeah, at that time, yeah, it was that. And then I a friend dragged me to a Less Than Jake show on Halloween of 1998, and I literally was like, what is this? And I saw a different crowd interaction, a different like fandom, and I was just like, these are dudes that are just like regular dudes to me, whereas like the new metal world and the metal and the rock side was very like
rock star,
yeah, personified, and like I connected. So I was like, whoa, what is this? So I dove in and, you know, went and bought a bunch of bands.
Was that right when Hello Rockview came out?
Yeah, it was like that release.
Which I think
tour.
It's their best album.
It is their best album.
Yeah,
so that is a great record. Yeah, hell yeah. So I learned a little bit more of the DIY punk rock world through them and Suicide Machines and a bunch of other stuff. And,
who's on Warped Tour this year?
Yep, which is crazy. So and there was a very very punk rock cred venue called Fireside Bowl in Chicago. So
that still exists, right?
I don't think they do as many. There wasn't shows there for a huge stretch of time, but then they started doing them again.
I feel
again.
Like Real Friends plays there a lot.
Yeah, I feel like they bring back some shows, but it literally is a bowling alley,
okay.
Like full time. It's actually in that movie, The Breakup, where Vince Vaughn and Jennifer Aniston.
That venue's in that movie?
The bowling scene is from Fireside Bowl.
That movie is a love letter to Chicago.
It's a great movie.
Sad.
So I just, you know, again, I just started diving into that world. And then throughout high school, I found a couple of local bands, and I was very naive and just didn't understand why those bands weren't big. So I was like, well, why don't we just make your bands big? And they were just like, okay, how do we do that? And I was like, well, I have no idea. Let's start a record label, and then I'll get your CD in stores, and people will buy it, right? And that, luckily, being naive, helped, because I was calling Tower Records, blah, 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 whatever, and it actually kind of worked for a couple of bands. So I started
The Academy, right?
The Academy was one of the bands, and Gatsby's American Dream and Hidden in Plain View.
We were talking about Gatsby the other day,
yeah.
And oh my God, such an underrated band.
Great band. So yeah, I just kind of fell into it that way and just started to like put out records for my friends, and people kind of gravitated towards some of them, and that was how I got started growing up.
I think you need some naivety in this world, at least, yep. Because if you have too much realism on you, like my mom was the realism. She's like, you're going to move to LA and join a band. We just spent a shit ton. And she definitely didn't talk like this, but right, Fish hates my Jewish mother voice. So I'm going to talk in Scott Waldman voice. But basically she's like, you spend a shit ton on your college education,
yeah.
And you want to join a band. Like right. That seems backwards. Sure. And it worked.
Yeah. And you got to dive in that way. That's the only way it ever works.
Yep. And so you worked with the Academy, you worked with Gatsby's and a bunch of others, and then how did you transition to actually ended up working with Vinny from Less Than Jake, correct?
Yeah. Yeah, which was a really weird I was crazy just to work with him. But yeah, so I when I was running LLR and signing those bands,
what did LLR stand for?
Little League Records. But we received a cease and desist order from Little League Baseball when I was 18 years old, and I almost shit my pants.
I would have shit my pants.
So we literally just shortened it up, and we're like, let's just keep flowing, because we were like five records in.
So it just stood for like LLR.
Yeah,
like MTV doesn't even stand for music television anymore. It's right. Just since MTV.
Yeah, exactly.
Good
so,
for you.
So yeah, we went that route. So yeah, the first band I ever signed was called August Premiere, and then they signed to Feel by Ramen after the record I put out, and didn't do all that well when they moved up, but they were in the same scene of like the Fall Out Boys and Academies and all that. And then once Academy was going, they were opening for Fall Out Boy in Chicago, and John, who ran Feel by Ramen with Vinny,
mm-hmm.
Flew up and met them and stayed with us, and I just got to know him really well through that. And we actually had two more records in our contract for Academy Is, and they were like, well, we want to Feel by Ramen was like, we want to sign Academy Is, and I said, well, I have two more records, so what's this situation?
Hardball.
Like? Yeah, and they were just like, well, we don't do buyouts. We don't have enough money. They were a really small label at the time.
Right.
Fall Out Boy had just started.
Punchline was on it then,
Punchline,
right?
Punchline and Fall Out Boy and Recover. Like, they were still just getting going with that level. And I was just like, well, I kind of sat down with the dudes. And I was like, look, you're my friends. I'd rather see you succeed. So I'll tear up the contract. And you guys can move on.
Both parties can say no, and then it's null and void.
Yeah, so we basically tore up the deal. They signed a Feel by Ramen, and getting to know John and kind of just learning, just getting being a friend, and he'd always advise us on stuff. They were expanding at Feel by Ramen, so then he...
Were they in Gainesville?
They were in Gainesville. They were about to relocate to Tampa.
Okay.
So they were in the process of growing and, like, going from, like, a four-person company to, like, an eight or nine, I'd say.
That's quite an expansion.
Yeah, so they were, like, that's when, like, stuff was starting to hit.
Like Take This to Your Grave was doing well.
Yeah, it was up to probably like 50,000 records, which at that level for a label like that is a lot of records.
And in 2017, 50,000 makes people scream.
Yes.
Which is pretty nuts.
It's crazy. What's different 15 years later. But so then he offered me a job. And I said no 3 times, so that was fun.
Why'd you say no?
I had just so high hopes for LLR still, and I wasn't ready to give it
up. You're holding on to it.
Yeah, and then I kind of sat down with my partner, and I was like, man, we got a lot of debt. Like, how do we get out of this? Like, and it just one day clicked, and I was like,
did you get an advance from Fueled by Ramen?
No, we didn't. We got nothing. So it was very much like, man, this is silly. Like, I should jump on this opportunity, and if it sucks, then I'll come back and pick back up where I left off. That's kind of how I felt.
Why not?
So I did that, and I worked there for 8 years, and it was awesome.
And you lived in Tampa?
I moved to Tampa. I lived there for 3 years. And then as the three-year mark, they were basically starting to work with Atlantic Records a lot more. And then they were relocating the company all the way up to New York City.
Right.
And I didn't want to go to New York. I said, well, I'll move back to Chicago, and I'll just work there remotely and travel.
So you went back home.
And then I went home. So that was good.
What was it like living in Florida? Because obviously Newfound Glory came from Florida. Was there a strong scene when you were down there?
Locally, I'm not sure. I think that's when Mayday Parade was starting out, kind of in...
Under Oath.
Under Oath was big there. There was a bunch of bands that were big already, and then there was like A Day to Remember and Mayday and stuff like that was starting to get really big at that point.
We were talking about them outside. Yeah. I don't know why I point outside because no one can see me. But we were talking about A Day to Remember, and it just boggles my mind how that's the band that is, like, I mean, they're direct support for Blink.
Yeah, it's crazy. But they figured out that, like, the heavy stuff with the hooky chorus. That's, and a lot of bands can't pull one
Blink with breakdowns.
Off. It's great. So, yeah. So that was kind of the Fueled by Ramen intro.
And when you were at FBR, you were actually A&R.
Yeah. Well, I started at retail, so I just got in any way I could because I worked in a record store for 4 years prior and ran my own label. So he's like, we're expanding. I need someone to do retail. And I was always bringing in bands, and we were always bouncing ideas off of each other anyways because he signed two of my bands from LLR. So we kind of had a good, like, we liked the same thing. So we basically grew into the A&R position for me once we full went to Atlantic, because then they had a retail staff.
Right.
I was still running the FBR side and being the direct contact.
Was that like mail order, or was that?
No, like into stores and all that.
Okay.
And Best Buy and Target and everything. And then I was kind of coordinating all that with them. But at the same time, I was starting to break out into the A&R side. The first thing I brought in was Forgive Durden, and that's when he was like, well,
Razia's Shadow's amazing.
So good. And he's like, so well, good. Why don't you run this one? And I was like, whoa, what do you mean? And he's like, yeah, let's sign it, and you run point on it. So that was kind of my – I wasn't expecting any of that because I had brought in bands in the past.
But that's quite a bump.
Yeah, so I was like, oh, shit, yeah, let's do that.
Well, he obviously had faith in you.
Yeah.
My band, after the City Drive, Lido Beach, played a show with Forgive Durden, and they opened for Steel Train.
Yep. Great tour.
It was actually the day Obama got elected.
Oh, boy.
Which, it was at the Troubadour, so on Santa Monica Boulevard, people were shouting and screaming and so stoked.
Yeah.
And I got the results that Prop 8 passed, banning gay marriage, and I was just like, they're not going to be happy pretty soon.
Oh, boy. Yeah, they'll find out.
they'll find out the next morning.
That's not good.
Yeah, I'm sure. And this is before Facebook was as big as it is now. So what else? Who else did you work with on FBR?
So I got a kind of a weird history. Like, initially, I grew up kind of with the dudes from Fall Out Boy, and they helped a lot with the label side of things for me. So we were sort of working together before they went to FBR, and then Academy Is. And then when I got there and was actually able to sign bands, it was Forgive Durden, This Providence, Power Space.
You brought a Rocket to the Moon, right?
Rocket to the Moon.
Yeah.
Hush Sound I had a little bit of a hand in. Phantom Planet a little bit. There was a couple of the bands that I was like,
I remember that up. Was so cool.
Yeah, Days Away was one I got to work on a little bit, which that
pretty good old
is,
war, right?
Yeah, that shit was awesome.
That seems to be it's not Mapping an Invisible World, is
yeah,
that?
Yeah,
that seems to be one. The record that everyone's like, holy shit, like, what an underrated FBR record.
Yeah, we joked because it takes like a listen or two to really dive in, and we joked of putting a sticker on the front that was like, listen to this record 3 times before you make a judgment on it. Because anyone that would do that would fall in love with that record.
Maybe that would have sold 10 more copies.
A little bit.
And then that's platinum.
A little bit at the time.
So yeah, no, I mean it's crazy how, like, you just brought up Power Space. I haven't even thought about that band in years. But isn't the singer a producer now or a writer?
The guitar player, Tom. And he produces Against the Current, We Are the In Crowd, a bunch of stuff on Interscope, Borns.
Borns, wow, that's
yeah,
huge.
Yeah, it's like, I guess, yeah, he's one of the main pieces of writing and producing on that stuff. So, yeah, he broke off into that, which you could tell the whole time. He was the brains and writer and, you know, demos. And on the second record, when they made a record that we put out under the name Bad City on Atlantic, he basically engineered and produced 90% of the record.
Wow. So that was a rebrand.
Yeah.
And Chicago has been getting a lot of press lately for, I mean, not like press in the New York Times.
Right.
But, I mean, when you were there, I think the big band that people could think of was Alkaline Trio.
Sure.
And I think Smoking Popes, right? Yeah. And then eventually it became like Fall Out Boy and the Academy and all that. And now it's like Real Friends, Knuckle Puck, and a band that is on Equal Vision, which we will talk about, Sleep On It, right?
Sure. Yep, absolutely.
Yeah. What was the Chicago scene like?
It was great. Got really lucky for me that it was going on at the time that it was. Yeah, I was working with bands August Premiere and 504 Plan were the first two I had signed.
Plain White Tees, I just remember.
Plain White Tees and Lucky Boys Confusion. There was a bunch of stuff going on at the time.
Knockout.
Dude, Knockout was the one, actually, the first one out of all of our friends' groups of the bands that signed to a national label. When they signed to Fearless, and I told people that, they were like, at the drive-in label, why would they sign that? But it was so cool because those were our dudes, and we watched them like from zero to that.
Was the drummer from Knockout the drummer for Plain White?
Yeah, DeMar. He's in Plain White Tees. He's been in Plain White Tees now for probably 10 years.
He wasn't on Stop. I think he was on the next one,
whatever the bigger ones were he was on. But yeah, so it's like it all came from this small little scene that, and I say small, like we would play shows anywhere, like billiards, anything, and it would be 50 kids. And then all the way up to like selling out Metro 1,100 tickets, like in the span of 2 years or something, we probably built something like that. So it was really, really like everyone was kind of working together. It's something that
community.
I really haven't seen in a long time. But it was like, yeah, I mean, there was a rotating probably 7, 8, 9 bands that very much like toured together, played together, built shows together, did
Rise
free
Against.
Shows. Rise Against was blowing up at the time. Yeah, we had a place called Knights of Columbus where Fall Out Boy filmed their first video, Dead on Arrival, and like all this stuff. We would pack. There was a sense of community there to where it was like it was a $5 show every Friday. So you went. You didn't even care. You didn't look at a flyer. You didn't know who was playing. You would just go.
It's like when people bought Drive Thru Records, they didn't even know who the band was.
Exactly. And there was 400 kids every Friday night, and you would just go. So it's like if you had a new band, you'd be like, oh, can we play one of six on that show? Like you would beg to get in there,
and hopefully you get it.
And you would get it sometimes if you know, the right person booking the shows, gave a shit or gave you a shot. So it was cool.
I went to school in the Midwest and Ann Arbor, Michigan, and I met so many people from Chicago, from Highland Park, from Northbrook, from Skokie. I think, isn't Wilmette where?
Wilmette, yep. Well, that's where Fall Out Boy was.
And it seemed like they were just nicer people than what I grew up with on Long Island. No offense to Fish, but, or offense to Fish.
Sure.
But basically, it just seemed like that community really wanted their bands to get big.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, when Brand New and Taking Back Sunday blew up, like, I left Long Island as soon as it got cool.
Yeah.
And when, like, Brand New and Taking Back Sunday, people were like, what the fuck, man? That's my band. Like, that's Long Island's band. And I felt that Chicago, they were just like, dude, like, we just want people in Dallas to like us.
Yeah. I think there was a real sense of, like, pride on they would carry the flag, you know? And it was cool. And a lot of those bands, as much as competition was a big thing, it really wasn't. It was really a support system. And, like, the second Fall Out Boy was getting bigger and breaking out, they were bringing bands out. Or I think Knockout brought Fall Out Boy out or whatever it was. There was, like, everyone was lending a hand.
I remember they thanked them in their Take This to Your Grave book, and it's like, our brothers in metal.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is pretty wild.
And the singer sings on one of the songs. I forget which one.
It's on Take This to Your Grave,
though,
right?
Yeah, exactly. So it's like they all sang on each other's stuff, and like 504 Plan, Pete and Patrick from Fall Out Boy sang on that. Like everyone
October
was
Fall.
Singing. October Fall.
Holy
exactly,
shit.
Exactly. They were like the next wave, starting a little bit of the next thing. But yeah, no, Chicago was... There was a different vibe.
It's not everyone, so 2 years ago.
It's not. And now, though, I think Real Friends, especially Kyle and Dan from the band, are really taking notes from that scene and, like, coming back hard on it and, like, doing... They're throwing $5 shows now, and they're doing all this different stuff that worked and, like, building bands. And Real Friends do a great job of promoting other Chicago bands and passing out and, like all these different CDs and flyers and four bands that
on their behalf.
They don't have to, and they do. So it's like I love seeing that.
Well, and I feel that they're the reason why Knuckle Puck has any notoriety today too.
I'm sure it helped. Sure, I mean helps a lot. They're just so close and do tours and sing on each other's.
I think they go on tours every single year together.
Yeah. They do one a year, it seems. Yeah.
Which is nice. I mean, maybe not as much for the fans as them, but it's really
it's
nice.
All good. Yeah, great kids in both bands.
So yeah, so we have a few more minutes, and then we're going to go to an amazing commercial break. Hopefully, not brought to you by Steve Bannon. But basically, you and I have something in common, albeit you do it on a much bigger scale. You manage producers.
Yep.
How did self-titled? And you haven't gotten sued by anyone at self-titled,
not
right?
Not yet. No.
Okay. There's always time.
Yeah. Don't tell anyone.
So how did that happen? Because did you end up doing that concurrently with Fueled by Ramen, or as soon as that? Because we didn't really talk about your exit from that.
Yeah, so Fueled by Ramen, I exited when the owner, John Janik, left to go run Interscope. And then there was just kind of not room for me anymore.
Or the Swellers.
Yeah, unfortunately. Love those dudes. But yeah, so like, and then like, I literally started self-titled just because I loved all the producers I had worked with throughout Fueled by Ramen, and they never had representation. So I was always like, well, it's somewhat sometimes hard to get a hold of certain producers, or they kind of don't have time to negotiate or understand what else is out there, what's next, anything. So I was like, they were all my friends. So I just kind of reached out to, I think, four or five guys the first day I decided to do it. And they were all like, done, let's do it. Signed it all up.
That's beautiful.
Started going and growing. And yeah, it just kind of naturally happened just because they were all my friends and I wanted to take care of them.
Well, no, because I was talking about this with Ross Roby, because we co-manage a bunch of producers, and I think it's way less volatile than managing artists.
Yeah. And I managed William Beckett for a little while, and a few others I was trying to, and it was just very much like a different thing, you know? It's like, that's 24/7. Like, that's straight up, like, something goes wrong at 2 a.m. in Japan.
My light is not working in my apartment. It's like, dude, go to the grocery store.
Right. Not that detailed, but yeah.
I beg to differ.
Which, I didn't go too far down the artist management rabbit hole. I just kind of saw that it was like, man, this is a little different. And I think without a good team or system, I just knew that it wasn't going to set up right for me. So I was just like, I need to just be honest with myself and step away. I would go back at some point if I had the right system and the time frame for it, but it just
you're not a busy guy between Noise Creators, which we'll talk about, Equal Vision, which we'll talk about.
Yeah, it's just, it felt like producers were just my speed and my language, and I just felt it like, again, I was friends with everyone I work with.
They so actually say really thank easy. You too.
Awesome.
Which
because it's an awesome part.
It's a thankless job being behind the scenes for this stuff, and they seem really appreciative to have an ambassador.
Yeah, and it's nice when you can pull in the job that they've been dreaming for, or like the paycheck that they were like, oh wow, that's awesome.
That's what I'm worth.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just fun to be that part and help them out.
And it's also fun for you.
Absolutely.
So we're going to take a short break and get back, and we'll discuss a little bit more on producer side. A special shout out to Brandon Paddock, my homie.
That's right.
And we'll discuss Noise Creators, which is a really insanely cool outlet for producers. In fact, Ross and I are our client, Curtis Douglas, based out of Arizona, who's worked with The Main and Sundress, literally just got on it.
Yep, last week, right?
Yeah, it's pretty wild. And then we'll discuss the label that got me into Saves the Day, Equal Vision, and also Johnny's a father. That's so right. We could discuss that. I do not have any kids, and I'm nervous as fuck. So stick around. Yeah. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Waldman's Words with Johnny Minardi, who Fish actually just marveled over commercial break. He's a busy dude. And he's been up and down the industry, and it's just cool to hear that. I really try to make these shows informative, and I don't know if it can get any more informative than this, so thank you. So let's talk a little bit more about self-titled. I guess give a few shout-outs to a few people who are doing some cool stuff, because honestly, we could have an entire day talking about self-titled.
Yeah, well, Will Putney, who does a million awesome records every year. He's the busiest dude I've ever met and holds it all together. So that's rad.
He's busier than you?
He is busier than me, that's what? For sure. Yeah, he runs basically a factory of multiple producers and studios in his place, which is rad. Chris Crummett, who's working on some killer records right now, he's working with band Sworn In, Secrets.
Sworn In just signed a Fearless, I believe, right?
Yeah, exactly. Wow. So he just finished that record. I just started working with a guy named Machine, who has
Armor
been around.
For Sleep.
Yeah, he's done some pretty pivotal records over the last 15, 20 years.
Chris Cromwell also did Sleeping with Sirens, right?
Yeah, he did, I think, the first two, maybe the first one. I forget which one. Yeah.
I think he did the big one.
Yeah, he's been involved for a while. He's done some really, really cool stuff.
Is he based out of the Pacific Northwest?
He's in Portland, yeah.
Oh, my God, the hipster place.
Yeah, maybe a year ago he built this, like, studio on his property, so he's got, like, an all-inclusive thing now. It's pretty rad.
Oh, do bands, like, bed there, too?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. So he's got a crazy setup.
Which his family must love.
Yeah. He's got a youngin' as well, so I'm sure they love that. Yeah, Brandon Paddock, like you said, Nick Sampson, there's so many. Rob Freeman, Mark McCluskey, James
awesome.
Paul Wisner.
You got it covered.
Yeah, there's. If you need anything, it's I got someone that does it. So
that's the good thing.
That was the plan.
Yeah, any kind of music, you could find something on self-titled.
Sure.
Trademark.
That's right. I like that. That's good.
You're welcome.
But yeah, like I said, it's all people that I've known or worked with or admired or met through a really trusted friend, and it all kind of came together. And Seth Henderson from the Chicago scene, who did Real Friends, Knuckle Puck, and Sleep on it.
So there you go.
Tied it up.
Bridging the gap. That's right. How does that correlate with noise creators? I'd love to hear about that. Obviously, I'm literally in the know about that right now, but...
Sure, yeah. It's basically a service that launched. It's a year and a half now, maybe. Yeah, it was the end of 2015 we launched that. So the idea was mainly to kind of build a platform for producers, because I feel like there's a little bit of a disconnect on if you're a local band or even, you know, an A&R or a manager looking to get to the next level with a producer. There wasn't really a space outside of a few different scattered spots. If maybe a producer had a good website or on AllMusic or on album credits or like there's just random Wikipedia stuff. So I wanted to kind of just bring all that together for especially our scene to start. And if we expand, we expand.
I like that you say our scene. Thank you.
Yeah, there you go. But it's like we wanted to grow that, and we wanted to, you know, educate people on what the work they're doing, the producers are doing, and how you can work with them. And, you know, I think there's a lot of very skewed views or stories of how expensive or, you know, how crazy.
Or untouchable.
Untouchable, very much so. Whereas we like to try to kind of be the middleman. Like a lot of them I have relationships with, working with on the label side and or management or just acquaintances. And they, you know, we're very open to, if you want to work with someone, reach out. And we'll usually have a contact to, you know, reach out to their manager or directly to them, depending on who it is. And
people don't realize that, like if me and you started a band right now, you don't realize how easy it is to potentially work with a producer you
sure.
really love.
Exactly. And that's kind of what we wanted to, like, pull the curtain back a little bit and just be like, anyone can work with anyone if the right stars align. But at the same time, you could reach out and be like, well, how much does this guy cost to do 5 songs? We want to really get our start. You know, anything. We field the craziest questions, and we also do.
You have an FAQ section.
That's right. And we also just say, like, if we didn't answer your question, here's our personal emails. Reach out, and we respond to everything as quickly
as we can.
How
many emails do you have? Because I think I have 3 in my phone.
For what?
For your life.
Different addresses? Oh, I don't even know. 4 or 5, maybe?
That's
I'm not
a lot.
Sure. But yeah, it's fine. It all generally comes to the same inbox, so it's all good.
Well, tell me about Jesse. What's his role with Noise Creator?
Yeah, so when I was building it, I knew that I couldn't take it on myself, just doing the other stuff that I'm involved in, and I needed a partner that understood the producer side of it. And, you know, he's just one of the smartest dudes business-wise, social media-wise.
He wrote a book, right?
He's on his second book right
now.
Yeah, yeah. So he's just crazy smart, and we've always just kind of gotten along and bounced ideas off each other. And I kind of one night was just like, what the fuck? I need a partner. And he understands the entire thing.
Self-titled's all you though, right?
Self-titled's okay. Just me, yeah. And he just, so he, as a producer for 20 years, as a manager, he managed Transit and Man Overboard. So he knew all of the things that I needed help with. So we just kind of met up one day, and we just went into it. And just, I said, this is what I'm looking for. If you want to be just my 50-50 partner on this, let's rip. And he just, that was like, done, let's go. And like, we hit the ground running and built it all as fast as we could.
And a unique component of Noise Creators is there's literally noise between Jesse and each act that's
yes.
on the site. And there's an interview, an informative interview. So if you're in band X and you really want to learn more, you can listen to that interview and you
yeah.
can learn a lot.
Sure. Yeah, and that's one of the main things, is like getting people to understand how these producers work. And in their podcast that Jesse does with each of them, you find out a lot. You learn a lot about their process, how they got started, what music they like. Some guys love a different kind of music than their big credits show.
Most of them.
Yeah, because they kind of get a record that takes off and bands like that keep coming. Mm-hmm. And obviously running a business, you know, your customers are always right.
I'm sure Ryan Green is into other stuff than the Fat Wreck stuff.
Sure, exactly. So it's just really cool to hear their influences because I think you get another side of them that you would never find.
And sometimes, you know, someone with a strong like R&B or pop influence can make a better sounding post-hardcore record because they incorporate that into
exactly,
it.
Exactly.
All right. So check to Noise Creators, check to self-titled Equal Vision, a label that I got exposed to when Through Being Cool came out. And I listened to it and I was like, there's no way these guys are like a year older than me.
Yeah. They were babies at that time.
They were babies, but that record is so big.
Yeah.
That's Steve Evitz, I believe, right?
Exactly is.
So Equal Vision's had quite a history between Coheed and Cambria, launching them, to Armor for Sleep, Chiodos, the list goes on. And now you, correct me if I'm wrong, I think I'm right, you're A&R at Equal Vision.
That's correct.
What does that entail?
It's been a lot of fun.
You're off to that office shortly after this, right?
Next, yes.
Yay.
So, yeah, I've just been a huge fan, same as you. My entry point was Saves the Day Through Being Cool, and then Strider and Circus Survive and Chiodos.
So underrated, Long Island,
yeah,
man.
Fairweather, all this shit. There was so much good stuff back then. So while I was at FBR, I was just a huge fan and friendly here and there. Never really met them or anything like that. And then when I managed William Beckett, they were one of the labels that was really excited. So I got to know Francesca and Dan at EVR really well on the management side. And then I was very, like, after FBR, was very much not ready for another label. I was just like, I need to disconnect
myself. You're a little
burnt. Yeah, big time. And then, very odd, but I randomly one night turned to my wife and said, I'm going to start a record label tomorrow. She's like, that doesn't make any sense, but all right. And then I reached out to Dan the next day and said, hey, I'm going to start a label. I want to go through Equal Vision. Are you down? And he's just like, all right. I don't even understand what you're asking me, but give me a week. So he came back in a week and said, I'm not interested. I said, okay, yeah, that was a really dumb approach. And he's like, yeah, but, you know, we like all the same shit. Why don't you just come work here? And I was like, I didn't even think of that. So
why start your own?
Right. And I was like,
I was about to ask you, what is this subdivision of Equal Vision called?
It doesn't exist.
Little League, Big League Records?
Yeah, it would have been something along those lines, sure. But yeah, so it kind of fell into it in a way to where I was like, shit, yeah, you're right. He's like, we like all the same bands. You know, you'd be a good asset for some of the bands we're working with now. Bring in some new ones. Like, let's just kind of do it together. Mm-hmm. Let's not separate it. You know, I was like, all right, shit. So I met with him like a month later at South by South. South by Southwest, not So What.
Yeah. It's not even called South by So What.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's why I was like getting
tangled. That's some old school shit.
Yeah. But yeah, so me and Francesca met for a couple hours and kind of hit it off, and we're just like, let's start. And that was right when my wife was pregnant, so she we were having a baby.
While you were in Chicago.
Yes. And right. We were having a baby 2 months later, and he's like, look, take some time, whatever time you need with your family and your child, and then come and start working whenever. So 2-3 weeks into my daughter's birth, I started working at Equal Vision from Chicago.
And then you uprooted.
And then I uprooted a year and a half into that, and now I'm here in L.A.
Well, we'll talk about family in a second because we'll end with the beautiful part.
Yeah, that's right.
But as a newly married guy, I can learn a lot from you. But who – because I understand – does Equal Vision have – are you the A&R staff or do Francesca and Dan?
Yeah, Dan and Francesca are the main A&Rs. And then when me coming in, we kind of all three dabble together.
Who have you brought to the label?
I brought Water Me Down, Come and Rest, Vinny from the Movie Life. And more recently, I literally was thinking about this last night. I think I have 4 signings that I just
did. You do Sleep on It, though, too?
I did Sleep on It, yes. And then I have 4 that are coming up this year.
And is Vinny's stuff currently, is he still on EVR and Movie Life's on Rise?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's separate. It's separate. We knew it would be separate coming in. Dan and I have just long histories of loving the Movie Life. This is a Movie Life this time next year, basically influenced tattoo. So I don't
talk about Long Island.
I don't know if I told Vinny that, so that'd be awkward. But
yeah, you and me.
Yeah, exactly. So So that was one that I brought in, which that record's phenomenal. But yeah, Sleep on It is going crazy right now. They just finished with 4 Years Strong. They're going out with As It Is next month, and they just finished their record with Seth actually. So.
Buck's going to be here.
Yeah.
He's going to be on the show soon.
Absolutely. Buck rules. So yeah, so that's it. And yeah, there's a lot in the pipeline for EVR. We personally signed 4 more bands, and there's a bunch more actually coming as well.
Cool. I mean, I have been a fan of EVR for I think almost 2 decades. And did EVR start with Shelter?
Yes.
That's what I thought, right?
Yeah.
I saw them open for Glassjaw.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's great. Yeah, Shelter was rad. Shelter, actually, the dude in that band is a lawyer for a lot of the bands now.
Are you serious? Yeah. Wow.
Waterparks lawyer, a bunch of different
stuff. And he's Krishna, right?
Yeah.
That's kind of where Equal Vision came through. Yeah. I don't know if it's really currently doing
right. There's still some.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I remember the whole Krishna core thing.
Yeah.
That was big. I think the guy to my right's a little bit too young for that. But so you touched on this, and I touched on this too. I'm newly married. You've been married a little bit longer than I have, and you have a lovely young daughter. How is that possible to have a wife, to have a daughter, and to have about 14 email addresses and 75 occupations?
A lot of patience and understanding.
From her?
Yeah, very much from her. But she's a huge support system for me and helps me out a lot. So
what does she do?
She is an executive assistant / office manager she's been with the company for 8 years. And she, moving out here, she does it remotely.
Okay.
But it's a lot of the same work that, you know, I need help with every now and again. So it's very good to bounce ideas.
So she could be a mom at home.
Very much. So that's
daycare is expensive.
It certainly is. So yeah, so that is the way to have a good partner and have a lot of understanding.
Happy wife, happy life.
Yep, a lot of communication because the hours are very strange and the travel's very up and down.
Well, literally up and down because you're in Orange County. Yep. I won't say your specific address.
Sure.
But you work like in the Pasadena area, that's not a short commute.
Yeah, it's a commute. I go up a couple times a week, and we have an awesome office space up there with a couple managers at Royal Division and an agent at Spotlight Touring and a couple EVR people. So we have a good
shared space.
Yep. And then Pure Noise is like a block over. So
does EVR own Spotlight and own Royal Division?
They're involved. I don't know the exact business side of it, but yeah, it all started throughout the same system. And Spotlight was Soroka Agency,
yep.
And then Eric Powell moved over and took it over.
Yeah, that's pretty wonderful. You have a space with a lot of heads to bounce ideas off of.
Yeah, it's good. It's very creative, and everyone in there is very much tied into the same world that helps each other out.
Is all the are all the records in that space too? Like, is it that's a separate unit? Because I've been to a few labels where they have everything in-house, like their whole catalog, like actual physical records.
No, this office is more of the remote one. That's the Albany EVR office.
Okay.
Because that's a shared building warehouse with
Merch Now. Probably ginormous, right?
Yeah, and Merch Now and them are the same company.
Oh, okay.
So it's the same owner, and it's in the same building, which is just massive, massive building.
I bet there's a few 3 albums from Coheed there.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot. There's
That's
a lot
awesome.
Of you walking up and down the halls of merch is just massive.
It's probably stupid.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's very overwhelming.
So you have a young daughter. You have mm-hmm. a supportive wife.
Mm-hmm.
I guess we're going to close this out with some advice because you right away started working for street teams and you ended up, you know, starting your own label. What advice would you have because honestly, we really try to, like I said, make this as informative as possible for the listener. What advice would you have for someone who's just trying to break into this industry, which is fucking nuts?
Yeah. My advice would be to just get involved on any level, anything that you have access to. And now with the internet, you have access to a lot more than just locally. Like for me, it was like in Chicago, it was like go work at Victory Records or start my own. You know what I mean? And it just kind of, that was it. That was the only option. So I understand even in a big city, it was hard. There weren't a million options. So even in
they smaller didn't have absolute cities, punk.
Right. There wasn't a lot of big supportive different areas of the internet yet. But my advice would just be, yeah, just get involved. And I always like to just say, like, prove your worth to someone and they'll notice. Like, if you just find something that a label or a management company or something is in need of and you step up and say, hey, I'll do this. Like, I'll shoot videos for your bands. Learning Photoshop and
social media.
Yeah, social media and video editing, all that stuff is so important.
Show me the money.
And a lot of, you could just kind of walk in and say, hey, look, I'll do these extra content pieces for you for a couple months just to get my foot in the door, mm-hmm. and they will love you, I promise. So if you're good at it, I should
say
that.
They can never not use help. Yeah, yeah. Well, if you're not good at it, I don't think...
There's a level of interning, but I think it's just figuring out what path you want to take and going and finding those companies and what they look for, what they need, and just figuring out how to fill that hole, because everyone is so busy all the time, and free help is huge help, especially when you're providing value. And then eventually, ideally, you're good enough to where the value that you give them is something that they want to pay you to continue to do and do a lot more of.
I think too many people just want or demand a quick, large paycheck, sure. as opposed to building a relationship, building yeah. your own personal brand.
Right.
The word brand really freaks a lot of people sure. out, but if you could show someone like let's just say... someone really wanted to work for noise creators, they could prove that they could really, really add value to the yeah. company.
Yeah. And if they're bringing people in or bringing traffic and stuff to the site, we would jump on it in a second. And it's like never being too much of an ego to like go pass out flyers and do the things that actually matter.
Victory was good at that back in the day.
Very good. And it's very loud online now. So going back to the physical side of it wouldn't be the worst idea for bands in local areas. So.
And that's how you can – well, that's how if you're in a band, you can get shows by meeting these people because yeah. – it's funny, I'll bring up a band, this small band in Chicago called Disturbed,
sure.
that they got a lot of notoriety because a lot of people who were going to shows saw people wearing t-shirts
right.
that said Disturbed, and that was their tactic.
Yeah.
They gave free t-shirts out to people as yeah. marketing, and look how big they are now.
Exactly. So it's just kind of always being creative. But yeah, I think the main thing is just providing someone that with value, however that may be. And like I said, the easiest way now with social media and working remotely is like, building content for someone or a band or a label or a management team or whatever avenue you want to go to, be an asset to them.
Well, we're going to close this out. Thank you so very much for being here.
Thanks
I
for
guess
having me.
I ask you, of course, dude, anytime. Literally every time, so that fish is nice. So basically, we've got three labels, LLR, FBR, and EVR.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy, those three acronyms.
Yeah.
You've worked a lot. I mean, you've spoken about, you know, Saves the Day. You spoke about Days Away, Day. What is your favorite release that you are a part of?
Oh, my God.
I'm sorry. It's like saying your favorite child.
Yeah.
Well, I know you only have one favorite child right,
right.
now.
I do have a favorite child right now.
That might change.
Oh, that's crazy. I would – the most obvious thing would have to be just Academy is Almost Here because that was the first record I worked at Fuel Bar Ramen, and that's the record that – basically got me my job and my start and FBR's attention to want to bring me in. And those were my dudes that were just like living on my apartment floor for months or years and just writing that record. So I saw that thing from very bad demos all the way up through, you know, a record that sold 300,000 copies.
Was that James Paul Wisner?
James Paul Wisner.
Which I believe, and I think we spoke about this, they did work with him because of Gatsby's.
Exactly.
So it's all cyclical. It's yep. all...
It all stays in the same little family.
Well, I mean, I'm telling you that record in particular, for me, I thought that it was a really smart album, which a lot of the records at that time were lacking emotional depth.
Sure.
And I mean, people called it pop punk, but I just thought it was like really good pop rock.
Yeah, I think that they kind of helped transcend that a little bit from the pop punk into like a little bit more mainstream pop rock stuff because they were so influenced by like Third Eye Blind,
yep.
that 90s pop rock.
Which is having quite a resurgence right
That's
now.
Awesome.
They're yeah. doing a 20-year tour and they're yeah. playing Greek.
That's awesome.
Well, thank you. I guess if you want to keep up with what Johnny Minardi is doing, list your socials. And
yeah, it's just my name at Johnny Minardi at Twitter, Instagram. Those are the main two that I keep updated.
Right now there's a new picture of him from the studio that you guys could take a gander at. It's pretty wild. So
fresh content.
It's beyond fresh. It literally just went up. So thank you guys so very much. And like I said, you'll be done before noon. It is 11:58.
Perfect.
Holy moly.
You nailed it.
Have a good night.
See ya.